Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this day back in 1960 that Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley appeared on the same TV special and performed the other's hit. Elvis sang Witchcraft. Which song did Sinatra sing? Was it A, Love Me Tender, B, Heartbreak Hotel, C, Jailhouse Rock, or D, New York, New York? And question number two, it was on this day, back in 1957, that a singer who would later become famous auditioned for Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts and was rejected. Who was that singer? Was it A, Buddy Holly, B, Elvis Presley, C, Bobby Darin, or D, Frankie Avalon? Hint, here's a snippet from one of his songs.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie. Cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, you give me all your love and your
love. Does that sound familiar? So, who's this singer who was rejected by Arthur Godfrey? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program.
Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die.
Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May the 10th. Well, it was on this day back in 1975 that Stevie Wonder and his band, Wonderlove, played for 125,000 people at the Washington Monument as part of Human Kindness Day. And it was 24 years ago today, 1995, that Jimmy Vaughn, Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Buddy Guy, and Robert Cray reunited for a tribute to Stevie Ray Vaughan. All five had played with Vaughan at his last show on August 26, 1990, before he was killed in a helicopter crash.
Let's do it. It's flooding down in Texas.
Willie and Son Lucas singing Texas Flood introduces our country music news. It's an article titled Five Songs for the Age of Disaster, and this is written by Lucas Nelson. In Rolling Stone magazine, February 2019 issue, Nelson, who will back Neil Young with Promise of the Real at shows this spring and summer, listens to these tunes when he's feeling apocalyptic. Ray Charles, Come Rain or Come Shine. The statement of this song is so defiant. I'll be your rock in a world that's falling apart. That's a good sentiment to have in a trying time. Neil Young's Sail Away. This is from Rust Never Sleeps. He's got friends he's lost, but everything is okay as long as he can get to a sailboat. I feel that. Willie Nelson, his dad, roll me up and smoke me when I die. Pretty self-explanatory. Ashes to dust, dust to ashes, and so forth. It's a jovial romp on one's inevitable demise. Tom Waits, come on up to the house. The world is not my home. We're just passing through. We don't know what this world is. And then Aretha Franklin, Bridge Over Troubled Water. How do we lift ourselves out of the times and into a new era of prosperity and hope? Nobody could do it like Aretha. By the way, Lucas's 2019 concert tour included a stop in Wilmington, North Carolina, this last weekend. Massenet's Meditation from Ties introduces our classical music news. It was on this day back in 1842 that composer Jules-Émile Frédéric Massenet was born. We have this bio from Encyclopedia Britannica, written by Virginia Gorlinski. Jules Massenet was born May 12, 1842, near St. Etienne, France, and died August 13, 1912 in Paris. He was a leading French opera composer whose music is admired for his lyricism, sensuality, occasional sentimentality, and theatrical aptness. The son of an iron master, Massenet entered the Paris Conservatoire at age 11, subsequently studying composition under the noted opera composer Ambroise Thomas. In 1863, he won the Prix de Rome with his cantata, David Rizzio, with the production in 1867 of his opera, La Grande Tante, The Great Aunt. He embarked on a career as a composer of operas and incidental music. His 24 operas are characterized by a graceful, thoroughly French melodic style. Manon, 1884, is considered by many to be his masterpiece. The opera, marked by sensuous melody and skilled personification, uses leitmotifs to identify and characterize the protagonist and their emotions. In the dialogue, it employs the unusual device of spoken words over a light orchestral accompaniment. The famous Meditation for violin and orchestra from Ties, 1894, remains part of the standard violin repertory. Several of Massenet's operas reflect the succession of contemporary operatic fashions, including French grand opera, Orientalism, a fascination with Asian exotica that was also prevalent in the 19th century European and American art market, the influence of Richard Wagner, and the end-of-the-century style of realism. Of Massenet's incidental music, particularly notable, is The Furies from 1873, which contains the widely performed song LRG. In 1873, he also produced his oratorio, Marie Magdalene, later performed as an opera. This work exemplifies the mingling of religious feeling and eroticism often found in Massenet's music. Massenet also composed more than 200 songs, a piano concerto, and several orchestral suites. As a teacher of composition at the Paris Conservatoire from 1878, Massenet was highly influential. His autobiography was entitled Mes Souvenirs, 1912. My Recollections. Robert Johnson's Crossroads Blues, sung here by Rory Block, introduces our blues music news. As noted by C.J. Baker in SpinDiddy.com, because there has been so little that has been properly documented about the influential blues artist Robert Johnson, he has developed an almost mythic legend around him. His death at the young age of 27 also added to this mythology. He died on August 16, 1938. At the time, his death was attributed to strychnine poisoning, but this is also widely disputed. The mystery surrounding his death also contributes to his significant legacy. Even though his recordings consisted of a scant 29 songs that were recorded during 1936 to 1937, his music was an essential part of the fabric of rock and roll. While he was initially underappreciated at the time of his death, many famous blues guitarists such as Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, and Keith Richards discovered his music and were influenced by his playing style. It was said that Johnson went down to the crossroads in rural Mississippi one night and met a large black figure, the devil, exchanging his eternal soul to become a great guitar player. This myth began because when Johnson had started playing around the Deep South, he was not known as a particularly good guitar player. But one day, he suddenly showed up as an expert player with technical skills that no one else could even match. Many people thought that his rapid development was due to some supernatural influence, and thus the Crossroads myth was born. And in music research and technology, we have this article. Actually, it's the same one we just read for Robert Johnson. It's entitled The Forever 27 Club, and it's written by C.J. Baker in SpinDiddy.com on the 5th of April, 2019. The number 27 may be the most infamous number in the history of music. This number has taken on mythical status due to the prevalence of many iconic and groundbreaking musicians who died at the age of 27. There is now a certain mystique associated with that age and the general notion of important musicians dying young. The term Forever 27 Club was not coined to refer to the list of musicians who died at the age of 27 until after Kurt Cobain's death in 1994. Since the death of Cobain, there has been a greater focus in the media surrounding the 27 death phenomenon. Also, the high-profile death of Amy Winehouse, who also died at 27, in 2011, once again brought renewed interest concerning the 27 Club. With the 2016 death of actor Anton Yelchin, Pavel Chekhov in the reboot of the Star Trek movie series, the 27 Club once again was starting to make the news. With his death, the media started to include young actors and other notable artists as part of the 27 Club. Even though their deaths were equally tragic, this article is focusing on musicians that died at that age. Even though the media began to coin the term the 27 Club after the death of Rolling Stones guitarist Brian Jones in 1969, there were other musicians who died at the age of 27 before that. The most prominent is one of the founding fathers of the blues, Robert Johnson, who we just discussed in the jazz and blues section of this program. The earliest recorded member of the 27 Club was composer Alexander Levy, who died in 1892 at the age of 27. One of the questions that remain is, why have so many musicians died at the age of 27? There's no shortage of theories. There are numerologists that feel that 27 is a significant number. There are theories concerning the number 27 club members that owned white lighters, for example, and so on. Many dismiss the 27 death phenomena as just simply an unexplained coincidence. One factor that is widely noted is that many of the members of Club 27 have lived lifestyles that have contributed to dying at a young age. Of course, this doesn't fully explain, well, why not age 26 or 28? But part of the mystique of the 27 mythology is the fact that we don't have clear answers. It is the unexplained nature that helps ensure the Forever 27 Club a place in music folklore. Now, over 60 musicians, singers, and composers are listed in this article as members of the Forever 27 Club. And besides some of those already mentioned, they include Brian Jones, who died in 69 at the age of 27, a founding member and guitarist of the Rolling Stones. Jimi Hendrix, widely considered to be the greatest guitarist of all time, and is considered to be one of the most influential musicians in the history of rock, also died at age 27. Janis Joplin, the queen of psychedelic soul, who fronted the San Francisco band Big Brother and the Holding Company, died at age 27, just 16 days after Hendrix in 1970. Jim Morrison and the band The Doors, like Hendrix, also burst onto the music scene in 1967, displaying an innovative blend of blues, rock, and psychedelia. Kurt Cobain, frontman for Nirvana. It was after his death in 1994 that interest in the 27 phenomena took off. The term Forever 27 Club was coined, but it's now also referred to as the 27 Club, Club 27, and the Curse of 27. And Amy Winehouse, who became the most high-profile member of the 27 Club since the death of Kurt Cobain. She died of alcohol poisoning at age 27 in 2011. The Cranberries' Dream introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an article entitled, Farewell, The Cranberries' Last Act. This is written by David Brown, April 2019 issue of Rolling Stone magazine. When the Cranberries gathered to make a new album in London last spring, all seemed normal. The Irish artists began their days working on arrangements, something they always did before their lead singer, Dolores O'Riordan, would arrive later in the day to add her vocals. Dolores would normally have a listen to what we'd done, then she'd let her do her thing. Bassist Fergus Lawler says, "So in the evening, you're almost looking in the corridor to see if she's coming in. And then you realize, oh yeah, she won't be in." A few months before, in January 2018, O'Riordan had been found dead in the bathtub of a London hotel room at the age of 46. An inquest later found she had drowned from excessive drinking. The alcohol in her system added up to more than four times the legal driving limit. The British coroner called it a quote-unquote tragic accident. It was a sudden end for a singer whose emotionally frailty and siren-like voice captivated a generation in the 90s and beyond, as fans stuck with the band long after the hits ended. O'Riordan had struggled with alcoholism and bipolar disorder, but seemed to be doing better. "Some days she'd be struggling, and others she'd be great and strong," Lawler says. "I definitely didn't expect anything like this. She was working on her mental health and getting better. I think this was just an accident." O'Riordan left behind songs and demos, and with the blessing of her family, the surviving band members have fashioned those remains into a final album, In the End. Working with their longtime producer, Stephen Street, they played along to O'Riordan's demo tape voice, which could be unnerving. It was a bit strange hearing her through the headphones, says drummer Mike Hogan. Sometimes there might be a break, and you could hear her talking. Since O'Riordan hadn't recorded finished vocals, meaning there would be an occasional missing word, the band turned to one of the Cranberries' backup singers, Johanna Granich, to fill them out. It wasn't easy. Lawler remembers listening to one particularly moving song, the moody Lost, and breaking down. When we were listening back to that the last day, he says, I just couldn't help myself. I lost it. Unlike many posthumous albums, In the End feels like a fully realized one, with songs that find O'Riordan addressing her children, A Place I Know, and escaping her inner pain, Catch Me If You Can. I kind of want to say she could see into the future, says Lawler. There were some quite poignant ones, even more so now that she's passed. O'Riordan's mother, Aline, said she was delighted the album was done, but couldn't bring herself to play it. I don't feel ready yet to listen to anything, she says. No use in getting yourself upset. There are no plans for the surviving members to tour with another singer or even play a tribute concert. People have said a lot of dumb things to me, like, well, find another singer, says guitarist Noel Hogan. Maybe they think they're being nice, but it's not something we're ever going to entertain. I think the band accomplished a lot, and I think we'll leave it on a high with this album. Martini performing the title track, Hey Eugene, off their 2007 album, introduces our local music news. It's an article entitled Pink Martini and the North Carolina Symphony, coming up this weekend, Friday, May 10th and Saturday, May 11th at 8 p.m. and Saturday, May the 11th at 3 p.m., my Mandy Concert Hall in Raleigh. North Carolina Symphony, Wesley Schultz, conductor, and Pink Martini. Pink Martini is part big band, part classical ensemble, part salsa troupe, and all fun. The lush sounds of the symphony back this popular group in a dynamic, vibrant show with the silky, sultry voice of singer China Forbes, featured front and center. So go to ncsymphony.org or phone either 919-733-2750 or toll-free 877-627-6714 for tickets and more information about this concert.
Eugene, I said hello.
So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1957 that a singer who would later become famous auditioned for Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts and was rejected. So who was that? Correct answer. Answer A, Buddy Holly. As noted in FredericksburgStandard.com on the 20th of February, 2019, in an article by Michael Barr, A Gift from Arthur Godfrey, Godfrey, a red-headed, freckle-faced ukulele player, made his name in radio and transitioned easily to television. His programs were a medley of music, goofy, extemporaneous commercials, and uninhibited banter. His top-rated TV show, Talent Scouts, an early-day America's Got Talent, gave a shot in the arm to struggling performers Tony Bennett, Pat Boone, Patsy Cline, and Roy Clark. But the show's screening staff rejected Elvis Presley, and Buddy Holly, the King and the Cricket, succeeded anyway. And the answer to our first question, it was on this day back in 1960 that Frank Sinatra and Elvis Presley appeared on the same TV special and performed the other's hit. Elvis sang Witchcraft. Which song did Sinatra sing? And the correct answer is, answer A, Love Me Tender. As noted in a December 10, 2015 article in Graceland.com, when the king of rock and roll returned from his stint in the Army, he was welcomed home by none other than the chairman of the board, Frank Sinatra. Jazz and rock and roll collided when Frank Sinatra and Elvis sang a mashup of their hit singles, Witchcraft and Love Me Tender, respectively. It's so interesting to see these two great singers offer such different versions of each other's greatest hits. Elvis was paid $125,000 for this show, an unheard-of amount in that entertainment industry in 1960. While Elvis and Sinatra never worked together again, they often kept in touch over the years, though. Elvis's personal record collection here at Graceland contains many Sinatra records, and, of course, both men sang powerful versions of My Way. So let's close out today's program with an instrumental version of that Sinatra song which Elvis sang, Witchcraft. Run out of time for today's episode of Music Review, and as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleRadioReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.